I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we're going to talk about a number of events happening in the news. One of the first things I wanted to talk about is the situation in South Africa. We posted an article to our Facebook page a few days ago about the growing hostility against the Christian community there, who are primarily white. The way the whole situation in South Africa is generally represented is the blacks versus the white minority there. What most people don't know about the situation is that it was these Dutch Protestants that had come from Europe more than 400 years ago who actually settled and developed the country that became known as South Africa. They are the ones who built that country. No, they did not take the land from the blacks. Why? Because there were no blacks there when they arrived. My understanding is they had no blacks there for about the first 100 years of development of what became South Africa. And this is something that, of course, is typically distorted in the media, especially Western media, that has persistently worked against the Christian population in South Africa. They've made it very much an issue of race and accused them of racism and all this other kind of stuff, much like what we see happening here in the United States and in the countries of the West. It happens in England, Scotland, Ireland, all over Western Europe, up in Canada, etc. All of anybody who is a conservative and holds to a Christian view of the world is typically branded as a racist, especially if you believe in law and order. And this has been the case there in South Africa. And really, what you're dealing with is not black versus white. You're really dealing with pagans, some of whom are cannibals. I talked about on the program before the book Into the Cannibal's Pot, written by a South African citizen who used to be a liberal, and then she became, once she recognized what was going on, she realized that this is a destructive movement that's going on there, that masquerades itself as though it's going to be something for equality and everybody's going to be unified and all this other kind of stuff. What they sold in the media through Nelson Mandela years ago. Now, there's a news story being reported in the New Zealand Herald, where the headline says, quote, "The time for reconciliation is over. South Africa votes to confiscate white-owned land." The most valuable land that is there would appear to be that which is occupied by the whites, who, again, are generally Christian. But they're the ones who produce, through their farming, a majority of the food for the country because of their industry. And so now it appears that the communist radicals there, they're saying, okay, time for reconciliation is over, because that's the way that the whole unity movement began. It began back with Mandela saying, we're going to overcome whatever differences we have between whites and blacks and this kind of thing, and we're just all going to be unified. Let's reconcile ourselves and be one South Africa together. We're all going to be together here. Now they're saying, okay, we've done that. That time has passed. Now we just need to go confiscate, now that they've really solidified their power. Now they just want to go confiscate whatever land they can from the whites who are there. And the whites for years now have been raped and robbed and murdered and just butchered in their homes, these white farmers. You go online and read about it. The stories are horrific. what's been going on there. Really, really very sad, very, very tragic what's happening. And many of them have just been, you know, they're in these refugee camps there in South Africa. And they're still being preyed upon. They're trying to figure out some place to go. There are people who are calling for President Trump to make it possible for many of those who have been persecuted, many of the whites who have been persecuted, to come to the United States and to find some sanctuary here, because the situation is getting worse and worse and worse. I think the white population there is now at about 15%. So they are heavily outnumbered. Many South Afrikaners have left that part of the world entirely. They've gone to Australia. There's even a documentary on this that I saw some time ago. Many of them will go to Australia and just get out of there because the crime is so bad. You have to live with bars around your house. You have to have, they have safety rooms in their homes where you have to have at least one room that has an iron or a metal door on it, like a metal gate, looks like, almost like the door of a prison cell. So that if your house is broken into by thugs, you can go run into that room, close the door, you know, and it's not just an ordinary wooden door. It's now got to be a heavily steel reinforced metal door that protects you. When I interviewed last year, some of you will remember, I interviewed Dr. Peter Hammond, who lives in South Africa. His ministry there, Frontline Fellowship, is in South Africa. And I was, I was taking him to the airport after the interview and we were driving. And I said to him, I said, the situation in South Africa, I said, is it as bad as what we are reading and hearing about online on the internet? And he said, it's probably worse. He said, it's probably worse than what you're saying. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing him, that essentially when you live there, you have to spend an inordinate amount of time being concerned about your safety. Even just to walk out of your house, out to your car, you have to be very concerned about that. They have, iron gates surrounding their properties. The people who live there, the whites, the Christians who live there typically have to live that way because they don't know what's going to happen. And virtually every day, it is said, there is a white farmer who is murdered, attacked, and killed somehow. Most of the people there, either directly or indirectly, they know somebody, they have a family member, a loved one, or they themselves have been assaulted, mugged, beaten, shot at, something. They've all been victims of crime, most of them. And they've told these stories for years. I've watched the interviews. I've listened to them for several years now. I mean, it's really a very sad situation, what's happening there. And the fact that the international community, by and large, does not help them. I mean, there's no help from any of the countries that should be trying to help them. The United States should be trying to help them. Great Britain should be trying to help them. Australia, New Zealand, these countries should be trying to help them. The problem is that these historically Christian countries have been undermined and infiltrated by socialists over the last 40 to 50 years or so, however long it's been. But I would say about the last half century, systematically, you've had socialists that have crept into these governments, and they are very hostile toward Christianity, as we know. They have pursued policies of militant atheism. I mean, we're watching that here in America. They're working to undermine at every turn the presence of Christianity in the United States. Now they've got, I'm following stories, there's a cross, a memorial cross that was erected some time ago, and now you've got the atheists calling for its removal. That supposedly it's unconstitutional, which is perfectly absurd. What's unconstitutional is atheism. Atheism, as any sort of political policy, that's what's unconstitutional. But they've turned everything upside down here in modern times. where our Constitution is concerned. How you can have, I mean, just read the Declaration of Independence, that that rights come from God, from the laws of nature and of nature's God, which is an ancient Christian phrase, which means the laws of nature and the laws of God. It goes back more than 1,000 years before the American Revolution, and is largely based on Psalm chapter 19 that talks about the voice of God in the creation and then the law of the Lord, meaning in the scriptures. Blackstone even wrote about this. So that's the foundation, really, of American law and what rights are supposed to be in our country. But all of that has been swept aside now. It's been misrepresented. It's been really falsely represented. So that the whole idea that you would have God or the authority of God or the mention of God or Christianity in our government is seen as unconstitutional is perfectly absurd once we examine the history. And that's not to say that the revolutionaries were perfect. We know that they were flawed men. We know that some of them had these deistic leanings and so on. But there's no question, nobody thought that you couldn't have the Bible and prayer in our public schools. Nobody thought that way. But anyway, this has been the movement, brethren, that's been going on since the 1960s and 70s in our country, and it has gone on in the other countries of the West. And it is remarkably similar to what Alexander Solzhenitsyn said happened in the years preceding the Soviet Revolution, the Socialist Revolution in Russia that brought in the Soviet Union. And that was, he said, militant atheism, driving any reference to God and faith and so on out of the schools, out of the institutions of government and so on, that preceded the entrance of socialism and ultimately full-blown communism. That's what's so disturbing about what's happening. But there's no question, if you study the situation in South Africa, the people there generally believe that they have been undermined by communism. That's what's really behind this. This is not about racism. It's about communism. And communism has gone in there using all of these race-baiting arguments and so on and completely undermined what was once a great country. South Africa is said to have been a very, very successful country where they had a great economy. I mean, even today, if you go and certain parts of South Africa are still doing very, very well. I mean, it's a beautiful country, really, really magnificent. But the government is getting worse and worse, and there are many people who believe they are on the brink of what could be a civil war. So I think we need to be in prayer for the people there, for the Christian population there, especially because when they talk about the whites, the whites there are generally Christians. We can't say every single one of them, but generally it's a Christian population that is being relentlessly attacked daily by people who are pagan, people who are cannibals in some cases, people who believe in hunting albinos and cutting off their arms and legs and selling them to the local witch doctor because they think they have magical properties and this kind of thing. This is what they're up against. And many people in the West, I think many, many Christians in the West especially, don't realize that this is what's going on. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, it says in verse 3, "Remember them that are in bonds as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves also in the body." That we're to remember our fellow members of the body of Christ, those who are believers, who are in the midst of suffering. I think that's the case with what's going on in South Africa right now. I think we should definitely remember our brothers and sisters in Christ who are suffering in South Africa and who may be on the brink of undergoing a great trial in that part of the world. All right, brethren, let's go to our commercial break. We will talk more when we come back right after this.
Christian Film Ministry, Adalam Films presents A Lamp in the Dark, the untold history of the Bible. Enter into a world of saints and martyrs battling spies, assassins and wolves in sheep's clothing. A Lamp in the Dark unfolds the fascinating history, the Bible, and the lives of the saints who fought to preserve it. This exciting look into the times of valiant men of faith, such as John Wycliffe, William Tyndale, and Martin Luther, is a must-see for any follower of Christ. Filled with rich visual graphics and dramatic reenactments, A Lamp in the Dark is an epic documentary, a powerful witnessing tool for church and Bible study groups around the world. Share with your church, your family, and friends the untold history of the Bible today.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. In April of 2013, I found a Mountain House distributor and ordered some freeze-dried food for my family because I had become concerned about what was happening in America. Our lack of national security, the threat to our power grid. I've been a customer of Mountain House through one of their distributors. But now, Worldview Weekend, as of October 25th, 2016, has been approved to be a distributor for Mountain House. Now look, the key word here is balance. We don't put our hope in horses and chariots. We don't put our security in food and gold and silver. But it is important to be diversified and to be prepared. And if you're interested, you can now go into the bookstore at worldviewweekend.com/bookstore and check out some of the freeze-dried food that you can order. I think people ought to have a little bit put aside, as I've done since April of 2013, in case of an emergency. You get free shipping and handling, and you're supporting the general operating budget of Worldview Weekend. Just simply visit our bookstore, worldviewweekend.com/bookstore, worldviewweekend.com/bookstore.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Thanks for staying with the show today. Here's another headline on the whole situation in South Africa. This one from the Gateway Pundit. It says, quote, racist South African political leader Julius Malema, quote, go after the white man. We are cutting the throat of whiteness. Cutting the throat of whiteness. Now, this is not unlike the kind of rhetoric that we find here in the United States. I mean, we've got college professors. We've got, especially on your college campuses, there is just a continual barrage of anti-white and whiteness and white privilege, white supremacy, all this other kind of stuff. And of course, what they're calling white supremacy is typically not white supremacy at all. What it is simply wanting to overthrow the traditional, constitutional, patriotic element of America. That's what they're calling white supremacy. And effectively, that's what they did. That's what they're doing in South Africa. The people who built and established South Africa, they want those people overthrown. Now, they make it all sound like it's all about racism and race and this kind of thing, and suppose it's alleged fairness and equality. That's not it at all. It's really about seizing power and throwing out of power those who built the country. They did the same thing in Rhodesia. Rhodesia, what happened in Rhodesia to me is like a micro version of what's happening in South Africa and what's happening in the United States. That's why it's important to us, brethren. It's why we should pay attention to it. Now, a lot of this, I'm starting to see this a little bit differently. Well, I say differently. A more full narrative, I think, is beginning to emerge on the 20th century. And especially when we bring into view the issues pertaining to Islam and how they are very clearly the globalists, the people who are behind the subversion of Western civilization, the anti-Christian element in the West that is very hostile to Christianity and really wants to destroy Christianity. No question about that. This hostile element is using a series of weapons, and race baiting is one of their weapons. Another one of their weapons is Islam. And what I've been learning, in fact, I'm getting ready to speak on this when I go to Fargo next week. What I'm learning is that the use of Islam as a weapon by the socialists began somewhere between World War I and World War II. Between World War I and World War II, there's a book that I recommend. It came out a few years ago. It's called Islam and Nazi Germany's War by David Motadel. David Motadel, it gets all of these rave reviews from Princeton University, Stanford University, University of Oxford. They're giving all these rave reviews. It's all of this documented information about how Hitler and the Nazis employed tens of thousands of Muslims in the German army. They had a Waffen-SS unit that were specifically Muslims that were wearing the blood red fez with the skull and crossbones, the Nazi skull and crossbones, and then the Iron Eagle with a swastika on it. You can go online and look these guys up. They were part of Hitler's trained fighting units. They were fighting in North Africa against the Allies. And after the war, of course, Germany lost, and many of the thousands of these Muslims were taken as prisoners of war. Now, these were Nazi Muslims. I did not know this, but about 3,000 of them were brought as prisoners of war to the United States, and they were held in the state of Alabama until a few years after the war at Camp Opelika. Camp Opelika in Alabama. How many people knew that? My family retired in northern Alabama back in 1981. That was our last assignment. We were a military family. And we spent years overseas in Germany. We were stationed in Zweibrücken at one point. I was born in Frankfurt, Germany. We lived in a place called Pirmasens and another place before that called Weierhof, Germany. A really interesting way to grow up, I have to admit. And stateside, we were stationed at Fort Hood at one point. We were in Picatinny Arsenal, New Jersey. And our last assignment was at Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama. And that's where my mom and dad retired. And then we all went from there. But my family's still in northern Alabama. And I went to high school there. I've been back and forth there for years. I never heard that World War II POWs were kept in the state of Alabama and that these were Muslim Nazis. Muslim Nazis in the state of Alabama just after the war. Unbelievable. But it's true. You can look it up. Camp Opelika, about 3,000 of them. They were, if I remember correctly, it was 1946 when they were sent back, I assume, back to the Middle East somewhere or back to Africa, wherever it was that they had come from. They were fighting in North Africa. Very, very interesting chapter in the war. Many people are aware that Adolf Hitler met with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. What's been coming out here in recent years is the fact that the Grand Mufti had really mobilized the Islamic world on behalf of Germany. And the relationship between Islam and Germany went back to World War I. But between World War I and World War II, you had all of these German writers and intellectuals who were writing articles and books and so on and essays about Islam, and they were envisioning Islam as the world power of the future. And what they did in particular was they mobilized Muslims in all of the different British colonies because they were at war with England during World War I. They were at war with England during World War II. And so what they did is they decided to attack the British Empire, and to do it, they would stir up the Muslim populations because the British had millions of Muslims in all of these different colonies that were under their power. Up until the end of World War II, Great Britain was, the British Empire was the empire upon which the sun never set. So they had control of about a fourth of the planet. A fourth of the Earth, roughly, was under their control. But through World War II and after World War II, this is where you had the anti-colonization movement. And the anti-colonization movement was driven by the Nazis and by the socialists out of Germany and other parts of Europe. And they used as their weapon Islam. And they stirred up Muslims in all these different colonies to overthrow the power of Great Britain and to rebel against them. And that is something that continued after the war, so that within a matter of decades, the British Empire lost more than 50 colonies in different parts of the world. And that was the great decline of the British Empire. And I believe what we're seeing now, brethren, where you have all these Christians who are being persecuted in different parts of the world, it is, and especially when they're being persecuted by Muslims, and in some cases probably by communists as well, it's because Great Britain, it's because of this anti-colonization movement. The British Empire pulled out of many parts of the world, and so the Christians that were living there, they lost that protection that kept them from being slaughtered and persecuted and whatnot, and now we're seeing that persecution more and more because they don't have that protection. They don't have the British Empire to look after them. This is and now what's happening is not only have all these colonies been undermined one at a time, but now they're going after England, Scotland, Ireland. They're going after Sweden, Norway, Finland. They're going after France. They're going after America, the United States, Australia, New Zealand. And now they want to topple everything in the historic Christian world. That is what it appears to be. All right. We're out of time, brethren. We are going to have to stop it there. We need to continue in prayer as Christian people and seek the Lord for what God would have us to do at such a time as this. All right, brethren, that's going to do it for us today. That is our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.